Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is a perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life, there's no surrender. There's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through. We are the ones who will never be broken. With our final breath, we'll fight to the death. We are soldiers, we are soldiers.
Find the Patriot Journalist Network for the Facebook users. Just go to Facebook and go in the search engine and type in as one word, Patriot Journalist Network. And you will also find there Mark Prasik's show, which runs Monday through Friday evenings from 8 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time. And, of course, you'll find Bard's Logic Political Talk, which runs Sunday through Thursday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern. I'd also like to bring attention to Samuel Sanford's show, which runs almost nightly from 11 p.m. to 1 to 2 a.m. Eastern Time. And then you have on Friday and Saturday evenings, you have the Rex and Tech Show, which runs from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Now, tomorrow night, Bard's Logic will have the Constitution Party's presidential candidate, Virgil Good, on to discuss the Constitution Party and his bid for the presidency of the United States. Thanks to one of the members of our panel, Chris, who has been in contact with the Constitutional Party's some chairpersons, namely Mr. Floyd, Mrs. Whitley, and also Paul Venable, which were on the show the other night, and you can find a link to the archive to listen to the show if you missed that. And so what we'll be speaking about tomorrow night, we will cover social, economic, and foreign affairs issues, as well as state authority and state sovereignty as well. Now, tonight, however, we are going to discuss, of course, the Constitution Party, but as well as why conservatives and libertarians alike are diligently looking, even among ridicule and attack from their peers and friends, for a third party. Now, there have been some folks on some of the social networks that have been saying that, of course, that, well, now a vote for anyone but Mitt Romney is a vote for Barack Obama, which, of course, simply is not true. A vote for any candidate is just that, a vote for that candidate. So, but, however, you were still having folks calling the people looking for a third party, looking for someone who abides by their principles in order to vote for. They are still getting, as you know, said in the description, ridiculed and name-calling is saying things such as, oh, well, you were an Obama supporter, things of that nature, that we have been plants, things like that. But at this time, I'd like to let in one of the members of the panel, and that is Chris, and he can chime in on the Constitution Party and his experiences of what he's been having to go through when searching for and vetting third parties. So, Chris, I've got your line open. Go ahead.
Hey, buddy. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Good. Did you see my little note that I put in the did you see my little note I put in the chat?
Well, let me go to the chat because I'm doing some multitasking here. So, yeah. About being fired up or too many decent people being attacked because they are looking at researching third-party candidates. Who in the hell do these people think they are? The Gestapo. I have another word for it, but I can't type it here. Understood, Chris. Understood. And thank you for your input there in the chat.
Well, here's my input, because this goes back to, you know, the beginning of our investigation. You know, we kind of, you know, uncapped a can of worms, because we're doing what Americans are supposed to do. That's called vet your candidates. So we're vetting our candidates. We're educating ourselves. We're looking at, you know, the two main criminal parties, and then we're looking at other people, and we're getting to know them, and we're doing the research, and we're doing what you're supposed to do, what you're taught to do, your civic duty, and we're looking at what are the options, whether it be for this election coming up, whether it be for the future, whether it be for the millions of people that have quit the RNC over this debacle and the burning of our Constitution at the RNC in Tampa, because that's basically what happened. You know, they basically said your vote doesn't count, your voice doesn't count, your efforts on your community and state level don't matter, we will pick the candidate, you mean nothing, which is kind of like, I don't know, that's kind of like Russia in the Cold War era, kind of like Cuba, kind of like Venezuela, kind of like China, kind of like a lot of other countries that, you know, we have looked at as our enemies, you know, through our history as a, supposed to be a free people of a Republican democracy. And so we're just doing our job, you know, what we're supposed to do as citizens. Now, I don't know the mindset of people. It's really interesting to me because, you know, I got a chance to read some of the responses on Rex's wall. And I know a lot of these, and I know, and I've chimed in, I put my two bits in, you know, like, I mean, one of the most outrageous ones I heard about why you should vote for Romney from somebody who was part of a group that spent months telling people why they couldn't vote for Romney because of his religion. Now we're supposed to vote for, now we're supposed to vote for Romney because we can impeach him.
I've heard that argument. Well, if Romney gets in, we can just impeach him and get somebody else in.
We can't impeach an illegal president. How in the hell are we going to impeach Romney? And let me ask you this: why in the hell would you vote for a man you can impeach, that you want to impeach? Is the world? Rex and I were chatting. I go, is the world gone mad? Is this your? I mean, I hope these people, I don't know, maybe they do have college degrees, but I hope this isn't how we're teaching people to think in college because, you know, I mean, I am dumbfounded. That's just one. I'm dumbfounded by how these people justify their position and why they can use that position to attack people who are actually sanely, methodically researching other parties and other candidates and other options. I'm confused. I guess I'm confused because I think that in the Constitution and basic, you know, things that we're supposed to be following in this country, that's really my civic duty. So I guess, how can I say this nice? Screw you people, go get a life. I mean, if you're so bored that you have to attack people for following their beliefs and doing what their civic duty is, there's something wrong with you. You need to go find a day job or a night job and do something. Join a club. Join, you know, do a nonprofit thing because you don't belong in politics because you don't make any sense at all. I'm sorry. It's just so confusing. It's just so ridiculous to me, the stuff that I'm seeing. I saw a group. I got added to a group, even though I've asked people. In fact, we're on open air, so let me do it again. Please do not add me to groups. I don't know. You know, I've left all the groups because they're insane. They're gossip centers, news of the day, Obama this, Romney that. You know, we got to vote for Flipper. I mean, I'm doing my own thing. You know, leave me alone. Leave me out of your insanity. I saw a group that said, you know, as much as I hate it, and it was all my past Newt friends. I guess we were Newt friends. Who the heck knows what we were? But, you know, all my past Newt friends on there, and a lot of people I know, you know, and I'm like, well, that's really cool. And I look at the title of the group, and the about is, you know, I'm going to hold my nose and do what Newt said and vote for Romney. And the title is of the group was about, let's get Newt a job in Romney's administration. And I'm thinking 159 people in some group are going to get Newt a job in Romney's administration. I'm like, what are you people thinking? Romney don't want Newt in his administration, and if he has a job in his administration, it's been dealt with between him and Newt, not you and your group. I'm like going, what are we doing here? And I'll tell you what we're doing. I'm sorry, Robert. I'm on a roll tonight, man.
I told Rex
he's going to have to check me tonight because we got two shows back-to-back. But, and I'll say this again, I don't know what's going to happen in November. Most of the people I know who are a lot smarter than me, Romney's already lost. I mean, I've seen all kinds of people who run, you know, charts and graphs and follow this stuff. He's losing. It's not my fault. Yeah. It's his fault. He's a terrible candidate. He is not a Republican. Let me explain this to people again. Tens of millions of Christians did not vote during McCain. Hey, there's a good word for you. They just walked away and said, I'm through with this party. So here we go again. They put up Romney. Those same people aren't going to vote for Romney. So what are you worried about us for? You know, you need to go figure out how you're going to go get those 10, 15 million Christians who will not vote for Romney to vote. That's your problem. And in fact, let's discuss another big number of millions of people. Remember all the crimes committed against the Ron Paul organization? I'm on six or seven Ron Paul sites. They ain't voting for you, Newt. I mean, Mitt, I'm sorry, they're not going to vote for you. You are the exact same thing in their mind as Obama. And there are campaigns and lawsuits and all these things going on. They are going to guarantee you lose in every state that they have enough power to make sure you lose in. That's who you need to go bother, not the handful of us who are just kind of doing this educational run, getting to know the third party people, vetting the candidates, meeting the people, building the coalition of people. You know, we're not your threat. Your threat is all those other people who already made the decision they won't vote for you, no matter how much you bribe and attack them. So that's who you need to be going and making friends with. And here's the most important thing. At the end of the day, in terms of strategies, I have developed organizations, nonprofit, for-profit, for churches, expanded businesses. I was brought in to take dying businesses, and people would say, okay, Chris, how do we turn this business around? This is my background. This is my whole professional, almost my whole professional adult life. You never, ever, ever get consensus or agreement from people you attack. Now, let me say this again for the hard of hearing. You never, ever get agreement and consensus from people you attack. So if your goal is to never have anybody who is vacillating and not comfortable with voting for Romney to not vote for him, you are doing the exact correct thing you need to do to make sure people who do not want to vote for Romney will never vote for him. Keep attacking. You're doing your job well, if that is what your job is. Now, if your job or what you think you're doing is trying to get people to come on board with Romney to save America with and that's just a joke. It ain't going to happen. But to save America with this candidate against the other candidate, then you're doing it wrong. Do you get it? You're doing it wrong. And nobody attacks me. I don't know why. We were having this discussion earlier, and I was talking to Rex earlier. I don't know why people don't attack me, but they always attack my friends. You know, and it just seems like nobody – some of these people who were attacking Rex on his site are on my group, but they never engage. And I'm like going, well, you want to have a discussion? Let's have a discussion. In fact, I have other groups I've built where we can take the controversial subjects, get them off my group, because I have a working group where we're working, you know, and I try to quell the arguments as quick as possible because I have a mixture. I have Newt supporters, Palin supporters. I have Paul supporters. I have Lip Johnson supporters. I have Good supporters. I have Hofling supporters. I have Christians. I have non-Christians. We're a coalition of patriots, of people who believe in the Constitution, believe in the rule of law, believe in the things that we have learned, not learned from Newt, but, you know, why some of us are Newt supporters is that core value stuff. And so we're building a coalition of people to have some discussions and do research and kind of a work group. But I have some other groups where if you want to go over there, we can argue all day and night about, you know, whatever you want to argue with. I call it the social issues group, you know, and you can go over there and we can talk. But it ain't going to happen on my group, but I have groups set up for that. But it's just amazing to me that they hide, they kick you off a group, and then they talk about you behind your back. And I'm like, you know, I said this on the show not long ago. It's like junior high all over again, you know. So anyway, if your strategy is to make sure all these people who don't want to vote for Newt won't vote for Newt, I mean Mitt won't vote for Mitt, then keep attacking because you're going to guarantee that it's going to happen because you can't take free, intelligent people and attack them and expect them to be your friend. I mean, I guess you guys, you know, had different parents than I had, but that was how I was raised, you know. Anyway, there was my, hopefully that fired it up. I feel better, Robert. Thank you.
That's good. Well, that's good. And sometimes, you know, I understand the need to vent and, you know, and do it, but the vent in a construction, you know, constructional way in which, that's probably not the right way of putting it, a constructive way is what I meant, in a way in which, you know, people can see what is, you know, going on there instead of just, you know, venting out just to get it some, you know, some emotion out.
Did I cover anything?
Well, I think you covered a point that I was just getting ready to mention.
Okay, go ahead.
No, that's quite all right. No, is that, you know, people are, and there is a reason behind looking for a third-party option because, as you pointed out, I mean, for months and months, you had some of these people who are now supporting Romney saying how terrible this guy is and how horrible this guy is and how, you know what, my principles won't allow me to vote for this guy. And then they turn around, and who are they not just saying they're going to vote for? So, hey, if you, my thing is, vote your conscience. If you really, in your heart of hearts, and I've said this all along, feel that you, by your conscience, need to vote for Mitt Romney, that's your, you know, that's your American right to do so. But don't be spilling hate over on folks like, you know, myself and you and Rex and Kelly and others and people in these groups who are saying, look, we want to explore another option because we realize there are others out there who represent us. See, this is supposed to be a republic and representative democracy, okay? But if we don't have a candidate that represents us, why in the world would we vote for them? So leave your hate to yourself. If you don't like what we're doing, then just ignore us. If you don't like, because it has to be obvious by now, Chris, and what would you, yes or no, what do you think about this? It has to be obvious by now that they're not going to convince us to change our mind and jump on the Romney bandwagon.
Correct. Yes.
So, I was speaking with someone today, and I was like, look, we disagree, it's obvious. But, you stop the hate. I mean, we don't go onto your page and saying, oh, my gosh, you are a you vote for Mitt Romney? I mean, you must be... And Obama's, you must be, anti-American, or you must be, for abortion because look at what Romney's record is. Look at what Romney's been doing by taking money from, the people who make the day after pill. You must be, for abortion because you're supporting Romney. Well, we're not.
Or gay marriage.
Or gay marriage. Thank you. Or you must be for gay marriage because you support Mitt Romney.
Cap and trade.
Or NDAA.
NDAA, cap and trade,
Agenda 21.
Yeah. Drones over your house, or get off like Richard Gilbert, internment camps, fusion centers, spy centers, because you're for all that, because he's for all that.
Exactly. But do we do that? No. But when they come up, oh, well, you must be Obama and you must be the NDAA. And here's the thing that gets me, a couple things. One is... when they say if Obama loses or if Obama wins, it's your fault because you guys split the party. You guys are the ones who split the vote. You guys left the party. It's like, well, they left us. The Republican Party left the conservatives and the libertarians. We didn't leave them. That's one. Two, I had someone today who actually said in a post, they actually had the audacity to say, God wants us to vote for Romney and he wants us to boldly vote for Romney. And I'm thinking, okay, yeah, God wants people to vote for Romney, who is pro-abortion, pro-gay marriage, has been and still is. But the God of Christianity, the God of Judaism, okay, wants us to vote for someone who supports these kind of policies. Really? I mean, I'm not a scripture guru by any, my imagination, but I do know some of the scriptures. And where does it say that? Where does it say in the scriptures, where you should follow someone like that? I mean, if that's what they're going to go by, they're going to go by, this is what God says. Can they show me somewhere in the scriptures where God says that?
It was a revelation and a prayer.
So I'm like, where does it say that? Show me chapter and verse. I mean, I know people who can quote chapter and verse of the Bible. I honestly admit I can't do that. But to say that, oh, well, God wants us to boldly support Mitt Romney, really? And I just don't agree with that. And then the same person had the audacity, Chris, to say that, well, you know what? Actually, it's the Ron Paul people and Rick Santorum and Newt Gingrich who split the conservative vote. It's their fault that the RNC did what they did at the convention. So it's not the RNC's fault what they did. It's actually the people who, as this person put it, came into their house, okay, and tried to disrupt the convention. When did the Republican convention become the house of a candidate? I thought that convention was the house of the Republican Party. Well, if Ron Paul were seen as disrupting the convention or disrupting the house, he wasn't disrupting the Romney house. It was disrupting, you know, it was not, and I don't even think it's disrupting, but it wasn't the Romney house. That was the house of the Republican Party. They had every right. The Ron Paul folks, what they did at the convention, had every right to do what they did. I can't say the same, and I don't see how anyone else can say the same about what the RNC did. Breaking rules, changing room, keeping people on buses so they can't come in to vote. Really? How can you defend that? And by defending those actions by saying, well, it's the Ron Paul people's fault for trying to disrupt the convention. Really? They're just trying to get there to vote.
They were just trying to follow the rules.
Yeah. Well,
oh, my God. They had you know the details on that bus crap? They literally had police force and agents. Those people couldn't even get off the bus and walk to the convention to go do their duty as a delegate voted for by the people in their state. Voted, duly elected by the Republican process to do their job, to go into the convention hall and to vote. I'm telling you, if that is what you want me to vote for, sorry, you're nuts. Anyway, let me explain something to you, and I don't want to steal Rex's thunder. He'll be on here in a little bit, but he's got a really good analogy on this thing.
Sure.
But I'll get the conversation started. It's very important because we're going to talk about it on this show. We're going to talk about it on the emergency show or whatever the extra show he's doing tonight too. And we're going to get into this more in depth. But here's something people need to understand. Presidents are not elected by popular vote. Okay, let's
right.
try this again.
Not by national popular
It is a Republican
right.
process. They are elected by delegates, electors. You know, they're called delegates at the lower level, electors at this level. The presidential election is not won and lost by how many people vote for Romney or Obama or somebody else. It is won state by state by state. That is an important thing that people need to understand. These are just the things that we're discussing on my group. These are the things we're discussing on these talk radios, on these blog radio shows. This is conversation and education. Who you vote for is your problem. You know, I had a conversation with somebody who says, I have to vote for Romney because I'm a delegate, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I said, good, stand on the mountaintop and scream it. I'm going to vote for Mitt Romney. Great. I will never criticize you for that. I have never gone to another human being's radio show or another human being's group and insulted them for making a choice of who they were going to vote for. Never once have I gone to other people's site and attacked them. It is an important thing. Do what you want to do, but don't come to me and my friends and give us crap for it, because sooner or later it's going to bite you in the butt. Go ahead, Rob. So I'm sorry.
Oh, no need to be sorry at all. Yeah, and also is like, I mean, we have offered many a time, say, you know, come into the show, debate us, tell us why you think, you know, we should vote for Romney. But do they do that? No. They attack. You know?
Yeah, you know what I want? I want the person who had the voice from God that told him that you should vote for Romney. That's the one I want to talk to.
Well, I don't know if they'll come on to. I don't know if they'll come onto the show. And the
no,
thing
I want
amazing.
And then the other one I want to debate is the one that says we should vote for Romney because we can impeach him. That's the strategy I want to hear.
Right. Yeah, that's true. I don't think either of those things are gonna happen. You know, but it's
let's
like
have a seance while we're at it.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
You know,
Robert.
And so I'm like, you know, what do you mean? I mean, you know, I mean, I mean, here's the thing: they're acting out of fear. They're all afraid of Obama. You know, and the tactics, you could tell the tactics are being used out of fear because there's not a reason behind them. No, I did say you have someone come and ask me, oh, well, look at the numbers. you know, what numbers say the third party can win. But, there's a strategy that's out there that, you know, I won't speak of it. It wasn't my idea, so I won't convey it. It was someone else's.
Sure.
And if they want to convey it here on the show, that's fine. But there is a strategy out there that can actually, you know, go to maybe not, you know, presidential victory this time around. It still could happen. But even if a third party does not become president, okay, they could still get enough recognition to shake things up, in which come, you know, the local elections and the state elections and possibly even the presidential election 2016, there will be more of an awareness, more of what I would even think an acceptance of a third party thinking they really can win this thing.
Well, here's the thing to add to this whole conversation, now that I've calmed down and got some air. I've said my piece, so I'm at peace now. But here's the thing to think about. And I posted two articles. One is actually from Gallup, a very in-depth article on that goes back for several election cycles. 48 to 58% of the people, depending on what year you look at and when the polls were done, want a third party, a viable third party. But what happens is we get up on the election, everybody freaks out, and all the fear-based marketing on the left and the right, people zoom in, and then they typically roll back to the two parties that are in power. And there's a reason for that. That's marketing. And so what's happened in the conversation of America that's been missing, because as I've done the investigation and met some of these people in these parties, because us three of us, you, I, and Rex, are interviewing Virgil Goode tomorrow night, and that's really cool. Now, we had some of his
Actually, I spoke with real quick, Chris. I also spoke with Kelly Mordecai, and he's going to be coming in for a short period as well. So.
Okay, good. Kelly's a great guy. But here's the thing that's missing. From when you look at a statistical poll that 50% of the people in this country are actually going, a third party would be a great idea, and I'm interested. And you know that every time we come up on an election, especially for Republicans, and they put out McCain and then they put out Romney, that conversation is going on with a lot of people. You know, and I'm not going to name names, but I guarantee you some of the name brand people that we all respect that are conservatives or Tea Party people or whatever, I guarantee you they're having this discussion, because at one point in history in 1854, enough people got up and said, you know, these Whigs are wigged out, and we're sick of them. We're sick of the corruption. We're sick of them not listening to what we have to say. We're sick of the lies, the cheating, the stealing, whatever is going on in that era. They formed a new party. Guess what that party was called? It was called the Republican Party. This party formed out of an act of desperation that people were relying on were no longer representing the voice of the people, and they formed the Republican Party. The first president of this new party was Abraham Lincoln. So don't tell me third parties don't work. I've done the research. We've had 172 parties come and go in this country. We have 5 active major parties, and we have 33 minor parties right now in this country as it stands. The only reason that 50%+ of the people that say they would like to have a third party or their interest or it's a good idea, the only reason that it never manifests is it gets squelched by the two major parties, and the news networks will not give them any airtime. There's no educational platform for it. Well, guess what? In 2012, there is an educational platform. How many of us knew about the Ron Paul movement in 2008? Zip. They buried him. He had a blackout against him. How many of us knew of all the crimes and broken rules to keep the Ron Paul people out of power in 2008? Very few people. We didn't have the Facebook, social networks, blog talk, radio, and iPhones with video recording capabilities. This time in 2012, we know about it not because of the news covers it. The only two people who have covered the crap that have gone on in this convention is Ben Swan and Rachel Maddow. Two people. Okay, everything else was a blackout on Ron Paul. But anybody who's seen the videos I've posted shows a Ron Paul rally. He had a 11,000 people plus overflow at the Sundome, you know, before the convention. He had a standing ovation that lasted, 6, 7, 8 minutes. You know, then you go over to the RNC and it's like boring, dead,
You know, the only time they had any loud noise is when Boehner squashed the nays and forced through a vote and did not allow a proper hand count vote to be brought to the mics because they shut the mics off and broke the rules again. And that's the only time there was any noise in the Republican convention, Hal, because people are bored to death because they're not happy. This whole thing was shoved down our throats. So you got to go back to this thing and understand that today all we're doing is starting that discussion. That's all we're doing. It started out for me as a curiosity thing. I knew nothing about the third parties. I didn't know what a Virgil Gude was. I didn't know I couldn't tell you the difference between the Constitution and the Conservative Party. You know, Libertarian Party I thought was a bunch of liberals. But really, they're a bunch of constitutionalists. And I didn't know that because it said Libra, you know, I thought liberal. You know, I was stupid. I admit that. So being that I was raised by a bunch of educators, I decided to go do some research and kind of change the personality of my group because the convention was over, you know. And I said, well, let's do some research. Let's have some fun. Let's learn some things. Let's see what the options are. And it is amazing because these people – haven't had a good platform in the community, you know, in the world at large, because the major news will not do any decent reporting on them. And through the internet and Facebook and Twitter and YouTube and all the vehicles that we have today, the technologies we have at our fingertips today, we're able to educate the American people on these people, and that's all we're doing. And so I'm not saying vote for Virgil. I'm not saying vote for Gary Johnson. I'm not saying vote for Tom Hoefling. You know, I'm not saying vote for anybody because it's a state-by-state election. That's how the presidency is won. And so I can guarantee you Ron Paul supporters in Texas will not vote for Mitt Romney. They're gonna vote for Ron Paul. I already know that. So, you know, I can't tell them who to vote for. They've already made that decision. So you go to Virginia, you know, Virgil Goode, you know, he's a Virginian boy, right? And a lot of people are going to vote for him. I didn't tell him to vote for him. You know, you go to California, Tom Hoefling's American Independent. He's the American Independent choice, and a lot of people are going to vote for him down there, but also Virgil Goode is a write-in candidate down there, and a lot of people are going to vote for him. So you can't stop this conversation. It's going to continue on. And, you know, we're doing it, you know, it's your show, but we're doing a series of, you know, Wednesday, we have Virgil Goode on Monday. Tuesday, we're looking at getting, you know, trying to put something together that's really cool that people can learn. Wednesday, we've got the Gary Johnson, vice chair and chair of the Virginia Libertarian Party on. You know, we're having conversations so people can learn about these people because there's some really cool people in these parties. That's what I'm learning. You know, anyway, sorry, Robert.
Oh, no, that's okay. As I said, no need to be sorry. Exactly, and that's one of the things we're doing, of course. And that's one of the things. Another thing I said earlier, I said, because someone was, you know, chatting about, you know, bash or this, whatever. I said, you know, I said, this still is America, right? You're correct. You know, we still have, you know, free speech. I said, when did it become, you know, controversial to tell, you know, to inform the folks, to tell the people in America that you have choices? Now, you know, you do not have to vote if neither of these people, Romney or Obama, appeal to you. You have options. There's other places that you can go to find a candidate that, you know, you could support. That you can go and vote your conscience and feel like, okay, I believe in what this person stands for. I believe in what this person represents. That's when I color in that box or pull that liver or punch that, you know, hole or whatever. You can walk away from that ballot feeling I did my civic duty in voting for the person who I believe represents me the best. Okay, because one of the things that the United States is about is individualism. Okay, you vote for, you know, you vote for yourself. And then what you do is you get a collection of individuals who are like-minded folks, and they all vote together, you know, if they all vote the same way because there's the one candidate that, you know, espouses the ideals of the many individuals, then you will have a candidate that is best representative of the people. And that's how it's supposed to be. It's not supposed, okay, well, the Democrats are going to choose this candidate for the people to vote for. The Republicans are going to vote, put in this candidate for the people to vote for. And these are your only two choices. this is what you guys got. Well, if you got crap number one and crap number two, you know, well, what are you going to do, vote for crap? You know, I mean, I know that's, you know, maybe a sophomoric analogy.
You're getting mean, Robert.
Well, yeah, I know. I mean, some of the vicious vitriol that's coming out of my mouth. But I'll digress and open the floor to another member of the Bard's Logic panel, who is Rex Christie, who has a show, the Rex and Tech Show, which tonight, I believe the Rex and Tech Show is going to have a special edition of their show this evening at 11, starting at 11 till whenever time they're going to have the show till. But without further ado, I will bring on Rex, and he can explain more of that. So, Rex, go ahead.
Hey, Robert. I got to say, I just jumped on. So what are we talking about?
Nothing, actually. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, it's like Seinfeld.
No. Yeah. No, well, what it is tomorrow night we have Good coming on to Bard's Logic tomorrow
okay.
night. I do not know exactly what time. They did not have that information for me. So we're going to be having that. So I decided, well, I was going to do a rebroadcast tonight of one of the other panels, Kelly Mordecai's book, The Hidden Fourth Branch. But however, since we do have, you know, tomorrow Vudra Good coming on, then, you know, I'd like just to discuss, you know, him, discuss the Constitutional Party, and also we're discussing why, you know, there's still many folks out there who are still searching for, in a third party, a candidate that can fit their ideals, you know, one that they feel actually represents them, and how, although we're getting attacked just for putting that information out to the people, which they have every right to have, you know, then, you know, we're just addressing those issues tonight.
Okay, well,
those topics, I should say.
I think it's pretty straightforward. I think for anybody who's asking themselves, you know, which, quote, third-party candidate is right for me, okay, the first thing you have to ask yourself is, there really are no third-party candidates. They're all second-party candidates because there's only
Amen.
One first party. That party is called the Democrat Party and the Republican Party because they are the same corporatist party with two wings, and you're fooling yourself into thinking that they're actually giving you a choice. Now, I'm obviously referring to the POTUS election because down ballot, in some areas, you do have choices. There are actual conservatives, libertarians, liberty-minded constitutionalists who are running down ballot as Republicans, and I think you should support them. In fact, I think it's incumbent upon you to support them. But if we're talking about the presidential race, you have no choice. Obama, Romney, Romney, Obama, Republicrats, Demopublicans, whatever, it's all the same thing. It's all shit. It's all bad for the country, so just don't vote that way. So people are looking for a candidate they can get behind. And the reality of it is you, as a liberty-minded individual, whether it's your libertarian, conservative, Christian, whatever your constitutional view is, all of the candidates are viable options for you. Whether it's Gary Johnson, oh, but I don't agree with him about gay marriage. Well, you don't agree with Obama or Romney about gay marriage either. At least Johnson believes in the Constitution. Ron Paul, oh, well, but in my state I can't write him in. Okay, well, then go for Gary Johnson. Or Virgil Goode. Well, you know, Virgil Goode is definitely constitutional. Well, but he's not exactly libertarian. That's right. He's not exactly libertarian, but he's closer than Obama and Romney. So no matter who you're looking at, they're all viable candidates. The real question that you have to ask yourself is, which candidate can win in my state? Because I think what everybody's forgetting here is, oh, I got to vote for this guy, I got to vote for that guy. We do not hold a Democratic election for president. It is a Democratic election within your state, but the president is decided by the Republican system of the Electoral College. Therefore, it depends on the mix of electors that they get from each state. The only thing that you have the power to do in order to not take away power from people in other states is decide who the presidential electors are going to be for your state. So I strongly suggest you get behind any one of the Liberty candidates who has the best chance of winning in your state. For example, if you are from Texas, and I believe in Texas you have Virgil Goode, Gary Johnson, and Ron Paul, then you have to ask yourself, well, Ron Paul is from Texas. It is very likely that Ron Paul is the one who's going to be able to win Texas. So maybe in Texas you write in Ron Paul. if you're like me from the Commonwealth of Virginia, I can assure you Virginia is not going to go for Ron Paul or Gary Johnson, but I believe very strongly that Virgil Goode can absolutely, without a doubt, win. Not just take votes away from Romney and Obama, but actually win Virginia. So what you need to do is figure out in your state which one of these Liberty candidates is likely to win, and then vet them against the other two, not against all your personal values, because you don't have that luxury today. This is very deadly serious, and winning is defeating both Obama and Romney, and that is going to be the focus of the Tex and Rex show tonight at 11 o'clock. Back to you, Robert. Or Chris.
Okay, well, yeah, I'm here. I'm just actually working on getting things together for tomorrow night's show. If I can get a link out to everyone so they can, get to the show tomorrow night. So go ahead, Chris, while I'm doing that,
I want to
go ahead.
I want to add something because on the group, and you guys both see it, and Rex, you see it a lot too. Is we immediately, when we went into a vetting process, and it's still going on today, I was just looking at some different points, and I had to respond to something, okay? Because one of the things that I really, and Rex, you say this very well, probably better than I do, okay? The social issues. This election is not going to be won and lost in social issues, all right? And there's no president that's going to walk into the office and solve all these three top social issues for you right now. It's much more complicated than that. It took us a long time to get to where we're at today in this country, and it ain't going to happen right now. Right now, the issues on the ballot, okay, and I'm not saying social issues aren't important, but I'm also saying that picking your battle is very important, and that's a Newt Gingrich analogy. But right now, our country is getting ready to fall down the drain. We're $16 trillion in debt. We're falling in debt 40 cents on the dollar, every time. I mean, it's just insane what's going on. We got wars looming. We got our current administration, tickling the wounds, the open wounds of Syria and Libya, who are backed by China and Russia, and they're forming a coalition because they're sick and tired of us playing around and putting Muslim Brotherhood people in control of states in the Middle East. So there's a lot of stuff going on in the world, and that's going to be a pretty serious four-year process for anybody who gets elected. They ain't going to touch these social issues right now. Okay, what they're going to do, what they like to do, is they like to throw them out there and get the natives going psycho over them and get them confused while they continue to take away our freedoms. That's really what the social issues are about. It's about to get everybody arguing and fighting with each other so they can start another war or spend another $1 trillion while you're not looking or raise the debt ceiling again, or John Boehner can cry a little bit more and make sure that Obama gets his way while you think he's a Republican, which I'm not sure what he is anymore, and this is important to understand this. So it's key is you got to look at all issues, and I understand about voting your conscience. I get that. I get it. I hear it every day, 100 times a day on my group. I get it. But the thing you need to also look at is, can they govern? Can they get in there and take the things that are affecting our country that are crisis oriented right now, and do they have answers for those issues? Okay, and that's just something. And I'm not trying to take away anything from people who talk about I just can't vote for abortion. Great, don't do what Rex said. Find the guy in your state, help him win. Get out. Good arguing about it on Facebook, with your fellow friends, and get out there and do some groundwork and help them win. Get a hold of the campaign and go to work,
Yep.
and make something happen. So that being said, here's something else that I think is a very important point that people just can't get their head wrapped around. I'm going to remove my picture, and I'm going to write it on, where the picture goes, so people will get over this and understand the position on it. Newt Gingrich had the exact same situation that John Boehner has. He had control of the House. He was the Speaker. We had the most liberal president we had had in a long time. Plus, we had his wife behind the scenes trying to push Hillary care down our throats. There was a lot of things going on in that era. He had a House only,
And he was able to work with everybody and get an agenda moved through. Now, we can argue about balanced budgets based on, you know, counting tricks of the government, but he did something nobody had done in a long time. He also got some welfare reform. He also paid down the, helped pay down the debt. And he helped Republicans win, gave them power, got some things under control, helped define conservatism that we now all can walk around going, I am one. He helped define that. I'm not saying he was the only guy. But here's the difference. People who are so afraid of Obama, the Republicans have done nothing to stop him. That's an important, you've got to get that through your head. You have to ask yourself, why have they done nothing to stop him? And why is it that we have to have their guy in the office for this all to go away if they couldn't have stopped anything that Obama's done up to this point? Here's another point that people don't understand because they can't think past next week. All right, maybe I'm being a little rough on that one, in November. Okay, here's another thing that's important. All of the things that Obama set in place, a lot of that crap is going to move on past him. If you don't have a reformer in there with a strong Senate and House behind it, there's going to be no reversal. It will continue to move forward. These law, didn't the Republicans just fund Obamacare?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, there you go, folks. Use your brains and think about this.
And also, I think another thing is the fear tactic. Because I heard today that someone was, you know, said that, oh, well, this is going to be the last, you know, this happens, this could be the last election. You won't be able to even elect any, you know, have an election anymore because Obama's going to stop.
Didn't Romney just make sure of that? Jesus. Okay, I'm sorry, Robert.
Oh, no, that's okay. Yeah, you know, so you're hearing those arguments, and it's all encased in fear is what it is. And,
well,
you know, when you act out of fear, you don't make the right decisions. I mean, you just don't make the reasonable. How about put that? I just don't think if you act out of fear, you make reasonable decisions.
Yeah, well, fear is a perfectly normal human response to a frightening thing. In fact, if you weren't afraid, then there'd be something wrong with you. The issue is not whether you have fear or no fear. The issue is, do you allow fear to command you, or do you muster up courage and make a rational decision despite the fear? And I think
that's
very, very important. And to what Chris was saying about social issues, quote, social issues, I don't even know how to call these things social issues. They're not social issues. They're moral issues. Okay.
Amen.
And moral issues are absolutely 100% always the paramount, most important way you make any decision. But you have to not be a one-stage thinker when it comes to moral issues. You have to be a rational person who can see stage 1, 2, 3, and so on. So when you look at it, right now the likely winners, and most probably it's Obama, and we all know that Romney was designed to lose against him, but it could be Romney. Either way, okay, your moral issues are going to get devastated by either one of them. So you look at the other candidates, okay, and you ask yourself, well, they're all fairly pro-Constitution to one degree or another. I like some of them better on some issues and some of them better on the others. So, you know, who do I vote for? How can I vote for Gary Johnson, who is a pro-abort and pro-gay marriage? Well, you can vote for him if he's likely to win in your state, because I suspect that Gary Johnson's move to federalize gay marriage was nothing more than pandering to the Obama left who are disaffected, and he's trying to get their votes. But even if that were the case, remember something. If you elect Gary Johnson and he somehow wins, okay, he's going to be the executive with a rhino Congress and a Democrat Senate. Nothing's going to get done, okay? But at least constitutional candidates are trying to reduce federal power, which gives you a larger moral voice. So you've got to think pragmatically. And that way, if you're pro-life, you can't vote for Romney, you can't vote for Obama. You can vote for Johnson, you can vote for Goode, you can vote for Ron Paul. Now, granted, from a strictly pro-life perspective, your best bets are Ron Paul and Virgil Goode. Virgil Goode is pro-life, and Ron Paul delivered over 4,000 babies personally himself. Johnson is not pro-life, he's pro-abort, but certainly better on that particular issue than Obama and Romney. So that's the way you have to think about these things, but you have options. Now, The one thing that I will say is if you read the platform of the Constitution Party, it's got some very powerful things in it that are going to make some people somewhat uncomfortable. But if you're a social values Christian voter, it's going to be wonderful for you. It starts off and it says, "The Constitution Party gratefully acknowledges the blessing of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ as creator, preserver, and ruler of the universe and of these United States. We hereby appeal to him for mercy, aid, comfort, guidance, and the protection of his providence as we work to restore and preserve these United States. This great nation was founded not by religionists, but by Christians, not on religions, but on the gospel of Jesus Christ. For this very reason, peoples of other faiths have been and are afforded asylum, prosperity, and freedom of worship here. The goal of the Constitution Party is to restore American jurisprudence to its biblical foundations and to limit the federal government to its constitutional boundaries." That's fantastic. That is a great thing. Now, people say, "Oh, well, what's all this religious stuff doing in the party platform, blah, blah, blah." If you read the documents, the letters, the correspondence, the public publications in newspapers of our founding fathers, they are replete with religious references, including the speeches given by Abraham Lincoln and Franklin Delano Roosevelt as presidents. So this isn't unusual in these United States to have this. And if you're not a Christian, guess what? It still is a party that is for you, because it clearly says, "For this very reason, peoples of other faiths, or no faith at all, have been and are afforded asylum, prosperity, and freedom of worship here." So, you know, look at who your candidate is, look at what their party says, and understand something. You're comparing Johnson, Ron Paul, and Virgil Good over and against two oligarchs who do not share your religion, do not share your view on the Constitution, and frankly could care less about these United States of America because they work for transnational global oligarchs. That's
right.
How you have to look at this. Back
awesome,
to you, Robert.
Rex. Robert,
exactly. And those things are in those, you know, the transnational corporations. Yeah, they're definitely are not for the United States. They're just for themselves. Just like, you know, just like Obama. I mean, Obama has no interest in being the president of the United States. He basically wants to be the president of the world.
Yep.
You know, so that, and then you have Romney on the other hand, who just is a, you know, a corporatist where he just, you know, wants to, you know, rule through it. And there's different ways they want to use it. Mitt Romney is just going to use big business. And then you have, well, it will be, you know, big government as well, but I'm not as big as a government as, let's say, Obama. However, Obama will be through big government, in even larger government. But what's missing in both of those is we the people. You know, that's not where the power is going to be. It's not going to be in the hands of the people. It's either going to be in the hands of these transnational corporations, or it's going to be in the hands of big government. When I mean big government, I'm not necessarily talking about big government in the United States. I'm talking about a global government. I'm talking about the United Nations, and where our very sovereignty is going to be given away to the United Nations. And the United Nations is not a United States-friendly organization.
No, and we pay for it. That's what just blows me away.
Yeah, and it's in our country. Yeah, and we afford them all the security. Now, someone in the chat, and either one of you or myself, wanted more of an explanation of how the Electoral College works and how that all these polls that we see of these national polls, even if they do show that Romney is ahead, really do not mean anything because of the Electoral College.
Well, I can give kind of an overview. I'm not an expert on this. In fact, if anybody has a beat on an expert for me, I'm hunting down. I've got a couple of leads out there because I would like to interview an expert on this on the Tex and Rex show.
We need Floyd to call in.
Yeah. So if someone knows someone who's an expert on this, please call in. But I can give you an overview. Basically, when you go to vote for president, okay, you don't actually vote for the candidate themselves. You vote for electors who have been elected by the people of the state to go and cast a vote for a particular candidate. So when you vote for Rhino Romney Ryan, you're voting for the Rhino Romney Ryan elector to go and say, "I cast my vote for Rhino Romney Ryan." Or if you are voting for oligarch Obama Biden, then you're casting your vote for an elector who's going to go cast his vote for oligarch Obama Biden. So that being the case, you have to look at how the states are broken down by electoral college. And without having specific numbers in front of me, and all this information is on the internet, but I can't Google it while I'm talking, but I believe that to win the presidency, you need at least 270 electors of the electoral college.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea here is that
delegates.
Yeah, right. So you can win the popular. I mean, for example, you know, Bill Clinton got like 42 or 43% of the popular vote, but he got more electors than George H.W. Bush and Ross Perot, so he became president. In 2000, Al Gore had more popular vote than George Bush, and there was obviously the dispute in Florida, which was decided according to procedure, and the election went for George Bush because he won the electors. The reason that our founding fathers set this up, and it's a very interesting process, they set it up because they feared democracy, but they loved democratic processes. Okay, so what the founding fathers gave us is both a democracy and a republic. We use democratic processes to vote and express the will of the people, and we use republican delegation in order to get things done and check the passions of the people. Because in a pure democracy, whoever can sway the mob will rule as a dictator. In a republic, it's much more difficult because you have a layer of delegates between the will of the people and the guys who are ultimately given the power. So when they were setting up this system, they were looking at the Virginia House of Burgesses, which was the first popularly elected legislative body in these colonies. They also looked at the state of Maryland, which at that time was predominantly Catholic, and they based this system of electoral college upon the College of Cardinals, which for centuries has been electing the Pope. And the idea behind it is that you have in local politics, you vote popularly to elect a delegate who is an elector who will then represent your state proportionally in relation to all the other states to elect the chief executive. And that's what we're going to focus on. And I'm hoping to do a couple of shows on this, and we'll discuss it further here on Bard's Logic as well, that your power lies in your vote and your ability to talk to other people about their principles and what they should stand up for and affect the vote in your state. And if you affect the electors in your state, then they will go vote appropriately in the Electoral College. And as long as Obama and Romney do not secure 270 electors, neither one of them will be president, at which point it is likely to force the decision into the House, which obviously does not favor Liberty candidates, but at least whichever one of those losers wins will be severely crippled by the fact that they couldn't just get a mandate as the popular guy. And that's a very powerful thing. So I hope that clarifies it. If there's more questions, either call in or put them in chat.
That was very good.
Thank you, Rex. And one thing I want to chime back in about is one of the discussions we were talking earlier. And I mean, Chris, I thought it was funny, and I kind of agree, is where they said, where the, someone was talking about one of the social medias where, well, vote for Romney, and if Romney gets in, we can impeach him. A great strategy. But let's say that strategy is successful. Let's say that Romney is elected. Let's say he is impeached. Well, if he's impeached, that leaves the hands of the presidency in Paul Ryan. Mm. Now, with that kind of strategy, do we really think that Paul Ryan, either now or even then, even in a couple years, would he be someone that would be ready to be president of the United States? Does he have the credentials to be president of the United States? So let's say they go ahead and get Romney. Let's say they go ahead and impeach him. Well, then we have Paul Ryan. And I want to know how much more experience is Paul Ryan than, let's say, Obama, you know, or, you know, someone such as, you know, a Virgil Good or, you know, Gary Johnson or someone of that nature.
I got a question.
Yeah, go ahead, and then what do you would like to speak on that, I'd appreciate
it. My first thought when you said Paul Ryan, besides the chuckle that went through my mind, and you might have heard it slip out my mouth, how many times did he vote for the debt ceiling increase in the Bush era? And then how well did he do
in preventing the debt ceiling increase under the Obama era? And is he the guy, and is he part of the guy that set up that stupid panel that Newt said would fail the moment it was he heard about it, where they're all going to, you know, these non-bipartisan people are going to decide where the cuts are going to be? And on top of that, is anybody ever, you know, we're so busy running around telling everybody how wonderful Ryan is and his economic plan. Is that the plan where he actually cuts something or where they cut growth over the next 10 years?
Well, I wouldn't harp too much on that one because, let's face it, when Newt was balancing budgets, he was basically cutting growth also. But let's be clear about something. At this stage of the game, we're way past where we were in 1994. And two, that would at least be a step in the right direction. But unfortunately, all of mini Mitt Ryan, the wrong Paul's credibility as a fiscal conservative went out the window when he started sucking up to Mitt Romney. But as far as his experience goes, well, I mean, in some sense, he's on par with Virgil Goode, both being congressmen. He's certainly ahead of Obama, because Obama's 4 years of experience have proven that he has absolutely no foreign policy that's beneficial to the United States whatsoever. And compared to Gary Johnson, I don't know much, you know, regarding Gary Johnson's foreign policy experience, but, you know, Gary Johnson is a two-term governor, so he's got significantly more executive experience than mini-Mitt Paul Ryan. But at this stage of the game, it's about leadership. And unfortunately, Paul Ryan, who I believe could have been somebody if he had the right tutelage, say, under Newt Gingrich, he's been infected by the Beltway virus. So I suspect that, you know, and that's not that important, but the reality is, are we seriously having a discussion about electing Paul Ryan as president by voting for Mitt Romney in order to impeach Mitt Romney? I mean,
That is one of the arguments.
People are telling me to vote for Romney. people are telling me I'm insane because I want to vote for a legitimate party that actually has senators and congressmen and a POTUS candidate who was duly elected by delegates. But it's not crazy to vote for the guy who stole the nomination in order to impeach him. I mean, are people serious about this? Because I mean, what am I living in, bizarro world here? That doesn't make any sense.
No, you know what it is? You know what it is, Rex?
And they say we're not, you know, ensconced in reality. They're like, well, you need to get back to reality.
You remember that show, Dan, I can't even do the song to it, The Twilight Zone? You have just entered the Twilight Zone.
I think the analogy is more properly the outer limits. They control the horizontal and the vertical. Just sit back and let them control your mind. That's insane. I mean, that really is insane. I can't believe that anybody's seriously having this discussion. If you think that Romney's a criminal and your intention is to vote him in to impeach him, that's like saying, I know this guy's a bank robber, so we're going to elect him the president of the bank so we can arrest him when he robs the bank. I mean,
Oh, that's the analogy. That's beautiful.
Does that make any sense? I mean, this is just absolute insanity.
Oh, totally. Well, the way you said it makes sense.
Well, folks, Chris and Rex, I apologize for interrupting, but we do have someone here on the line. I don't know if they just want to listen or if they're in the queue, but I believe
they are
in the queue, so I'm going to put them in without announcements. But if they just want to be just listen, then go ahead and just give me some silence when I open up your mic, and I'll just go ahead and mute your mic again. But you are live, so if you'd like to chime in about anything this evening, go ahead.
Well, you guys asked me to call on electoral college and potential course of victory and so forth. I'm at a handicap, though. I admit I have not been on the show to listen, however. But I did want to say that today on Chris's site, I went through some of the material, or some of the thinking, perhaps, on the material of at least a course to possible victory.
Now,
Can we let the listeners first know who has called in? Because I don't think they know who you are.
Oh, I'm Floyd Whitley out of Idaho, Constitution Party. I posted some strange stuff on Chris's site numerous times.
I appreciate that, Rex. I was going to ask, but I didn't know whether he wanted to be anonymous. But I thought, well, okay.
Well, maybe that's a good idea.
hanging around us, Floyd, that might be a good idea to get a stage name.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, anyway, one of the things, and I would certainly encourage anyone who is interested in some of the details of our inner workings or machinations, or whatever you want to call it, of presidential polling and predictions and so forth. Tremendous site is Dave Leep's U.S. Atlas of Presidential Elections. It's a fascinating site, and its interface is very easy to use. And one of the neat features about it is you can, it's also interactive, so you can plug in what-if scenarios into it. I mean, you don't necessarily have to accept the Electoral College spread that they are talking about or predicting. But I think over the next 2 weeks, and that particular site will be interesting to watch because the prediction map is changing pretty fast, actually.
I'm posting that right now. I don't mean to interrupt you, but just so people can go there.
Right. Well, if you look at that data, they do have a prediction map up, and then, of course, they also have election results all the way back to George Washington, in fact. So for historical purposes, it's an absolutely fantastic tool to get into some of the mechanics of third parties versus mainline parties and that kind of thing. They also deal with gubernatorial and senator elections as well. And I believe you can even drill down to counties by state, which is another neat little trick about it. But the current predictive map that they have up, I think, is current until 13th of September. So they will be coming out, I guess, Monday or Tuesday with some updates to it. But a lot of states that were formerly toss-ups have tipped to Obama. He's got a slight Democrat, and one of the most significant is Colorado, I think. Colorado and Ohio, as well as Nevada. He also tipped Florida. I think that's probably an error. I don't see that one going that way. But the interesting thing about looking at third-party competition to the two mainstream parties is that Romney's support has pretty much been flatlined really since January. His support is not significantly greater now than it was in January. And, of course, in January now, he was contesting for the nomination against some very strong contenders at that point. And so there is no movement, really. He's increasing a little bit, I suppose, but there's no serious movement into support of a Romney presidency by the people. And Obama's electoral support is extremely volatile. It goes up and down and up and down. And so that is event-driven. You know, if something happens in Libya, the boom, it's down. If the Fed issues yet more paper, it goes up. And so what that says is that in his case, it's news or a reaction to news that is making his poll results that volatile. It doesn't show me, looking at it and say stuff in the past, that there's a strong like of Obama as a candidate. In fact, it shows me that because of this volatility, people may well be persuaded that they could switch horses here and be just as well off.
Well, if I might chime in just for a few moments, as you bring up, you know, how, you know, popular, how motivated people are, is I think one indication of, you know, how excited people are about a candidate is, you know, the boots in the ground. And one thing that I'm noticing, I live in a pretty, you know, the least of the local area I live in, neighborhood-wise, is a pretty conservative area, a pretty conservative neighborhood. And I just see a smattering of Romney Ryan signs in people's yards. And we do have a local conservative candidate here, which is a Republican candidate, but it's Steve Chabot, where I see a lot more signs for that candidate than I do for Romney Ryan. I mean, I do see some where both signs are in the yard, but I actually see more examples of where you just have a Steve Chabot in the yard, which is Republican, but no Romney. So they're a household that's willing to put a sign in their yard, but it looks like they're willing to put, you know, the congressman's sign in, but not Romney's. So I just see a lack of boots on the ground. I mean, the convention's been over for weeks now, so I think there would have been ample time, you know, to get this out, and I just don't see any indication of it, of any excitement for Romney.
The polling is I call it flatline, and it is for Romney. Even after the election, it's flatline. I guess what, going back to the volatility in the Obama numbers, Dave Leib has, with this last week, front end of last week, updated a predictive map. And as I said, it tipped some of the states over to slight Democrat. I mean, that doesn't mean, and certainly that's within the margin of error. But I guess my point is, given the volatility of above 270 electoral votes for Obama to crashing well below that, being event-driven, it's also possible that the states that are now registered to Obama could, depending on external forcing agents, actually tip back into toss-ups. There's no real loyalty in any of those states to Romney. And so I guess what I'm saying is, as long as a third party could pick up approximately 35 electoral votes, they may well succeed, even collectively, whether that's Green Party, Libertarian Party, Constitution Party. They may well collectively prevent either Obama or Romney from securing 270 electoral votes. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, it does.
That's the most viable strategy. I mean, the fact is, look, getting all the disaffected Republican voters to get behind one candidate is seriously like herding cats. And even though I've given it a shot in the past week, it's impossible and it's not going to happen. But getting people to focus on the most winnable, not Romney, not Obama candidate in their state is not only doable, it's the most viable strategy to block either of them from securing the presidency. And I think that if we focus on that strategy, we really got something there. I mean, I know for a fact that in the Commonwealth of Virginia, I believe that Virgil Goode not only has a chance of taking significant votes away from both of the idiots, but I'm confident that he can win this Commonwealth, because other than the three counties outside of the Ninth Circle of Hell, otherwise known as I-495, the Beltway around Washington, D.C., the rest of the Commonwealth is very conservative, and I think Mr. Goode has not only a shot, I think he has a good chance of winning.
Well, what I count on Leap's predictive map, I have, not counting Florida, I'm ignoring that for the moment. I've got 28 electoral votes, not counting Virginia, not counting Iowa, Wisconsin, and South Carolina. Those are still toss-ups. But you have 28 electoral votes that there's really not a lot of support for Democrats, certainly meaning Obama, in those particular states. And those states are still in play. And if you add those to the Commonwealth of Virginia and possibly to Iowa, you know, now you're starting to talk about very seriously stopping either one of those candidates from obtaining 270 electoral votes.
Mm-hmm.
So Nevada, Colorado, Ohio, and New Hampshire, along with Virginia, it's not just Virginia,
right.
And I would add Iowa to that as well. Those are actually crucial to take. And then I would say, at least from the Constitution Party's standpoint, one of the states that's going to be fascinating to watch, I think, is going to be Michigan, because we have a very strong slate of candidates in Michigan. Missouri as well at the lieutenant governor's slot. So this.
Let me ask
this.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Let me ask you this question, because none of us really know what would happen when it goes to the House. We know that it can go to the House. What happens if it's split between four candidates and it goes to the House? What's the dynamics in that environment from your perspective?
Well, first of all, we haven't exercised the Electoral College in that fashion in, I don't know, 3, 4, 5, 6 generations. It's been a while. And it would have to work. In fact, there wouldn't be any choice for it not to work. Some president would have to come out of that. And under the circumstances, because of the Republican majority in the House, one would expect that a Republican or at least a Republican-endorsed candidate would come out of that. But that said, Virgil Goode is not necessarily out of the running there either, because there could be a revolt from the Tea Party, so-called, Republicans who have said all along, we need a conservative up there. So they may very well, if it were in that circumstance, they very well may select Virgil Goode, who has been both a Democrat and a Republican.
Lloyd, let me ask you this then. I mean, because I think that there are still strong Tea Party conservatives in the Republican Party in Congress that have been silenced by crying tan John Boehner, that beef jerky, salted beef jerky guy. But what are the odds that the so-called yellow dog Democrats, who might be silenced by Nancy Pelosi, would look to Virgil Goode in order to prevent Mitt Romney from being the president?
I believe they would. I believe they would have to. In fact, I believe the entire, I believe a significant portion of the Democrat caucus would do so as well. If after, say, the first or second or third ballot went through the House and still nothing came out of it, you have to understand that, you know, in one case, particularly in Thomas Jefferson versus Aaron Burr, I think there was 36 ballots that passed through the House of Representatives before Jefferson was chosen president.
It's a Democratic vote point at that situation at that point, a head count vote.
Yes, by electoral votes, yes. But see, you're already out, if you will, and this is in the House itself. And there's a lot of horse trading, but the point being, it may well be that they in the House decide that it's better to have a compromise candidate than to have either of the other two. And I think, let me put it this way, if it does go to that, and Romney is chosen by a Republican House, you would have rioting in all of the major cities in this country, probably. And conversely, if it was selected the other way, you probably would in the countryside. So it may well be in a enforcing that to the House to decide that someone like Virgil Goode would be selected over either of the two. But he's the best candidate running anyway, in my view, so.
We give you that. We'll give you that.
Yeah.
That's fair. That's fair. You're that's your man. So that's cool. This is fascinating. I mean, the things that we have learned because of the process of deception and crime that has occurred through this primary that has forced us to learn is I don't know about you, Rex, but I'm fired up that we've had been forced to learn how to be better citizens through this process.
Well, in my humble opinion, and take it for what it's worth, this is perfectly natural, because our tendency as human beings is to trend to the lowest common denominator because of our corrupt and lazy wills. And sometimes you have to lose that which you hold dear in order to be kicked in the butt to actually stand up for what you truly believe in. And, you know, Scripture clearly says that, you know, God chastises all his sons, and he treats us like silver in the refiner's fire. And that's what we're going through. There have been many people, many intelligent, patriotic Americans who have been screaming this message for a long time, and they've been written off as a lunatic fringe. And now I believe that it's being revealed, and it's causing a lot of discomfort for some of us, but it's being revealed that the lunatic fringe are those who accept the status quo of a false choice that doesn't exist, and the true patriots who are living in reality are the ones that are teaching us these things. And I think that we all have to become comfortable coming out of our comfort zones and actually standing up for the principles that our founding fathers gave us as an inheritance that we have a duty to preserve and pass on to our posterity. So I'm very excited about this, because I think that the wheat and the chaff are getting separated, and I believe that we have divine providence on our side, and as long as we're on his side, I think we will prevail.
Right. I did want to take a look at, you know, it's kind of radical to say, oh, well, you can predict these states and you might get this out of it. But if you look, if you remember, I said that Michigan would be an interesting one to watch. It is actually lean Democrat, I think, so a little stronger support for Obama. But in Nevada, interesting state, a couple of surveys came out in late August. They're somewhat dated. But if other parties are calculated into the mix, that's about 5% they're estimating, and that was 20 August. And they give, under that scenario, with third party, they give, predict Nevada for Obama by plus two. Margin of error, of course, is three, so that doesn't really mean an awful lot. But another poll does not include third party. That poll has Romney 47, Obama 50. And so that's a three, Obama three, in Nevada. So what that shows me, despite the claims of some of the larger parties, unnamed, that the including the third party in there is really not pulling the votes away from Mr. Romney, as it's claimed. They're actually taking them from both of the candidates. And in fact, in this case, they reduced the predicted lead in Nevada of Obama, not of Romney. Now, Obama, they're giving him the state either way. And so what that means then is the third parties in Nevada are having an effect, and they're lowering Obama's total win count in Nevada. And I will say to, I don't know, burnish our credentials here in this, Nevada is yet another state that the Constitution Party under the Independent American Party in Nevada actually has a pretty full slate. We have a senator and four representatives, U.S. representatives there in Nevada as well. So, you know, I wouldn't lose hope. If I was deciding whether or not voting for third party, particularly Virgil Goode, was throwing a vote away, I don't know. I don't necessarily agree with that. I don't think it's over yet.
Wow. That was actually going to be my next question to you, was what you just covered. That was on the tip of my tongue, but you went ahead and covered it.
Well, that's the beauty of that particular site. I really would encourage any of your listeners to go to that and, you know, stomp around. You can actually interact on your own state and take a look at what the polling data is saying for that state. Iowa is a little bit different breed, but there is some green showing up in that state. Green is independent, by the way, in the color scheme.
Okay.
And Iowa is kind of somewhat volatile. It's tipping between Romney 2, Obama 2, Romney 2, Obama 2. But really that depends on the independent vote. In early August, they included the independent party, and that tipped the state to Romney plus 2. But when they didn't consider independent votes, that tipped the state to Obama. And that's strange, but that's the way those polls were going it.
I have a question, not to pull us too far off topic, but it's an important topic. It has to do with a piece of my rant this earlier tonight that, you know, and I'm sure you've seen the article I posted in the Gallup poll that a high percentage of people, you know, on average at least 50% of the people in this country are for a third party. But then when you come into the voting cycles, then the third parties pull 3, 4, 5, you know, 10%, 19% on the best year. And I believe that's because of the squashed marketing and the fear campaigning that they do during elections, and the fact that they keep third parties out of the news, blacked out. And so they kind of, people are interested in them, but when it comes time to vote, they get, you know, they get forced into that box to vote third party, I mean, to vote for the primary parties. Here's the thing that I said earlier. I believe that we are in a time, especially with social media and the things that we have at our fingertips, that educational process that are going to let people know who like the idea of a third party, that we can actually get the message out to them that there are some real viable parties and people, you know, because I didn't know, you know, I had that programming in my mind, this is a two-party country, you know, drilled into my head my whole life, and it's fascinating to me not to over-promote the Constitution Party, but in our conversations of how many people you guys got down ballot, you know, the senators, the House of the Representatives, moving into the state, sheriffs, managers, city managers, you know, all these things, that this is a real party. And it's really accomplishing things. And that's important for people to know, because I think that if people know that, they're more apt to investigate it, ask questions, get to know people, and potentially make those decisions to join the party that fits their ideology. I'm done.
Right. Well, one of the things that I kind of find frustrating in some respects is that many times when people talk, particularly of a presidential candidate, their guy they're supporting, and particularly if they're a third party, splinter third party even, they only have a one seat, one guy ticket, and there's no depth to that particular candidate. But the problem we have is we have to staff the executive branch. I mean, we have 15 cabinet seats there, plus a number of agencies. I would prefer there only be 6 federal cabinet departments.
Amen.
But nonetheless, we still have to staff that. And one guy, one demagogue, may sound very well, but if you were to elect them, he does not have anyone that he can put into managerial positions. And so that's the difference between an actual real third party, and I would class the Libertarians that way as well, and to a degree, I guess, the Green Party. They actually do have down-ballot people that can step into government. And so when when you vote for a party, third party, in opposition to the other two, that's something that you have to consider. You know, if you have a party that is capable of stepping in and staffing the government, that's not throwing a vote away.
And also, I'd like to touch base more on having more local candidates, such as sheriffs and positions
right.
of that nature.
Right. I just got off the phone with one of the Constitution Party sheriffs. He happens to be in Idaho. As you know, I'm trying to put that program thing together. But he is right now, as we speak, in Las Vegas at the National Sheriff's Convention with Joe Arapaio down in Arizona. And he was telling me that he is learning so much just being there. And he said that this is Robert Moose out in Canyon County in the Boise country down in southern Idaho. He said that 4 or 5 years ago is when he really seriously started looking at what it meant to have a constitution and law enforcement. And he said that this meeting in Las Vegas is absolutely mind-blowing in how much is being lost and who the people standing between further loss of liberty and rights and constitution, how they need to become unified and to support each other. And so that's what's actually happening right now in Las Vegas, and it'll be a couple of days going on down there.
How important is the sheriff? I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, I'm here in Ohio, and I would definitely like to see more, local persons, running from the Constitution Party and others. But, because I really think that the third parties represent the new grassroots. And I think one of the things that is happening in this country is that the political elites in both the parties, the two parties, which, many contend are more like one party now, are making attempts to squash the grassroots and make them pretty much irrelevant, in which it's either one of the two parties actually picks and decides who the president of the United States is going to be. And then, of course, what we'd like to, move from the grassroots up, they'd like to try to rule from the top down, starting with the presidency, and then having that sort of power, that sort of grip over the we the people or the grassroots. And I think that's what they're trying to do, starting with the presidency and working them way down. And also, I think there's ways it's going to also tie into the loss of sovereignty for the United States to the United Nations, and where it's going to be not just the federal governments that are going to be under the, and this is long term, of course, if we don't stop it, where it's not just going to be the federal government that's going to be pretty much under the United Nations, but it's going to filter down to all the local governments as well, and some are thinking that's what Agenda 21 is about.
Well, I don't know whether it is or isn't. I think that the structure of the UN, what it in effect does is it converts the United States federal government equivalently to being a state of that more consolidated federal system. So, in other words, the United States would become much like a present-day state, whether it's Idaho or Ohio, underneath the federal government as well, and becoming less and less and less powerful, or less and less having less authority.
Gentlemen, may I interject for a moment?
Sure, go ahead, Chris.
Okay.
Chris, Rex.
This is Rex.
Go ahead, Rex. Right.
Yeah, Rex has to run because I got to scroll, ramp up the Tex and Rex show, which will be going live on Blog Talk Radio at 11 o'clock right after Bard's Logic is wrapped up, and we will be continuing this very same conversation. So I'm hoping that everybody can join us there to continue the conversation. And I would love to stay and chat, but I think Robert knows that it ain't the easiest thing in the world to ramp up a show and get started. But if you want to call in, I just put the link in chat. The call-in number is 646-649-1013. If you can join us, that would be great. And we'll be back on Bard's Logic tomorrow at 9 p.m. to have a wonderful conversation with one of the Liberty candidates and a fellow Virginian from the Commonwealth of Virginia, Mr. Virgil Good. And I'm very much looking forward to that, and I hope that you all can join us. So with that, I bid you all adieu, and I'll see you in about 20 minutes. Thanks, Robert.
Thank you, Rex, and thank you very much for coming in. And once again, folks, I do highly recommend not just going to the Rex and Tech Show tonight after this episode to continue the conversation, but to also remember that you can hear Rex and Tech Show every Friday and Saturday night from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And so people to go and check out that show as well. And it'd be great if and I'll be calling over there later on this evening to the Rex and Tech Show, and it'd be really great to see everyone who's in the chat and, of course, the callers as well, if you guys can make it over at the Rex and Tech Show this evening following here at 11 p.m. Eastern Time. So I'd like to open up the floor here to Chris, if there's anything else you'd like to chime in about, and then go back to Virgil. That'd be great. Go ahead.
Yeah, Virgil, is he on?
I still see his mic in the queue. So.
No, you mean Floyd.
Floyd, did I say Virgil? Oh, yeah, I guess that's the Virgil Good. In the
well,
mic.
I don't know what you just said, but.
Here's a question I was going to ask. I actually had one that was just brilliant, but I lost it in the announcements and stuff. It'll come back to me, but. I noticed you said something about the 15 cabinet seats, but you wish it should be 6. What, can you explain that?
Well, yeah. As I look at the executive branch, well, first of all, I think if you were to ask an ordinary citizen what's the federal government, you know, what is it, they would invariably tell you something about Department of Agriculture or Treasury or what have you.
Is this the czar? So, is this, I'm sorry, is this the czar's when you talk about this?
Well, no. I mean, the general concept of the federal government, what I'm getting at, is most people consider that to be the executive branch in its many departmentalized components and authorities and so forth. I mean, to most people, that is the federal government. And so if you were to say you need to downsize it, ultimately you're talking about downsizing the executive branch. You have to be. I mean, that's just the way it is. But the problem, what has happened over the course of our 200 and, I can't count, 30 years, is there has been a continual ratification of yet another executive department. And I don't believe that most of those departments, by rights, ought not to be a cabinet-level position. I think that we only have 6 that we need. Some people would argue more of a purity sense, we only need 4. I don't necessarily agree with that, but I do believe we need 6, and that's it.
Can you name them? Because, can you name those?
Well, I can. I think in first place, and it has to be for a sovereign nation, is the State Department. Mm-hmm. I mean, that has to be number one. No questions there. And because you operate a federal government, you have to have a treasury, obviously. And then this was, I believe, the Interior Department, and my memory may be somewhat off, but I believe it was the very first cabinet approved after we established under George Washington and so forth. I do believe we need an Interior Department to manage the internal affairs of the country and the ground and even the cities and stuff in some sense. So we do need an interior department. Obviously, because justice is required in any legitimate nation, we needed a department. Well, I hesitate to use the term Department of Justice. I would prefer to use Attorney General. And so we need an Attorney General.
Yeah, we do need one, don't we? A real one.
Well, yeah, we're not having one now. and then, of course, we need a War Department because, unfortunately, sometimes people over there want what we've got over here and they want to take it. So you do need a War Department. And the last federal department would be the Surgeon General. And the Surgeon General, of course, would be in charge not only of military health, but also domestic health as well, because the domestic population is part of your defense, and taking care of things like diseases and you know, plagues and illnesses and that kind of thing. So those are the six. And anything else beyond that is either a function of one of those organic six, or it is not a federal function.
So this has been part of this. This has been part of the overreach of federal government through the years. Is while we're working and paying our taxes and trying to be good citizens, they just keep building and building and adding more and adding more, taking over more and more and more of our of what they are not entitled to from the Constitution.
Well, I would also look at it somewhat differently. I would look at it as a matter of efficiency and as a matter of avoiding redundant jurisdictions. Because part of the problem with the federal government is, you know, a farmer out here, he's going to get a knock on the door from any number of different federal agencies, all of whom are probably addressing a single thing, but yet all of them want to have jurisdiction over that single thing. And so it's also jurisdictional. And to give you an example, if you look at equal opportunity, there's various names in federal agencies for that. Sometimes it's EEO, EO, what have you. But each of the 15 now departments, they have an independent equal opportunity office inside that government structure. And that requires money, it requires overhead, it requires a fleet of cars, it requires you know, assistant secretary and so forth. But the reality is, if there is an issue with equal opportunity, and if the federal government is not, in fact, keeping to its own standards, the whole of that jurisdictionally ought, by rights, to belong to the Justice Department. And so as long as the Justice Department was doing its job, there is absolutely no need for the hundreds and probably thousands of staff distributed throughout the executive branch in equal opportunity offices and bureaus and slots and so forth. That's just one example.
Let me ask you this. This is kind of a an overview question. Knowing everything you know that's in your mind that you ooze out onto us people that is just amazing and fascinating, how do we unravel this? How do we stop it? How do we take it back? Because, you know, we can stand in a pulpit, just like the guy who stands in a pulpit and says, I'm going to end abortion tomorrow if you elect me. You know, that's a little more complex than that. We all know that, or most of us know that. But when you look at this monstrosity that we have allowed these people to become, that invades, because this goes back to our whole state authority and state sovereignty and 17th Amendment and some of our other conversations and other shows. How do you unravel this? How does a man like Virgil Goode walk in there and go, okay, I got 4 years to unravel as much of this as I can,
And what am I going to do and where am I going to be effective? Because like Newt Gingrich has always said, just like with the contract in America, I'm sure he had 50 things he'd like to fix, but he picked 10 because he knew he could get it done. He knew he had the will of the people behind him.
So, well, the most leverage that you would have, and I believe this, but the most leverage that you would have to fix it would be one simple thing, and that is balance the budget. Now, I know that has sat in many mouths of politicians that have no intention of doing that, but just simply balancing the federal budget would force you, in the example I gave the equal opportunity offices, it would force you to rationalize the existence of thousands of people in what is a redundant, repeatedly redundant office throughout the entire government. I mean, there's no reason in the world to have that. The Justice Department has ultimate jurisdiction over any of that anyway. And so I think balancing the budget, you know, that's been dismissed and as being the talk of simpletons, but I'm not convinced that it is. I think that that's your leverage, at least to correct part of the problems with the executive branch.
Can a president force that to occur?
Yeah. Well, the way that would work is, first of all, he would actually submit a budget, a real budget, and do so by the law and on time, which hasn't been done of late. But at any rate, that does go through Congress. This is true. But he can also veto that budget. If the budget that comes back from Congress is out of balance, he can veto that.
How do these people not balance a budget when the law says they're supposed to?
Well, I don't know that the law says that they're supposed to necessarily.
Oh, really?
They've gotten away with deficit spending, and no one is standing there objecting. And the reason is your great-grandchildren, they don't have a vote yet. They're not even, most of them aren't even born yet. I mean, the current debt that we have is you're looking at over 80, even if everything in federal revenues worked as they say they're going to, we're looking at over 80 years before we'll be able to pay that off. It's an awful long time, and they keep adding to it. So to downsize the government, I think balanced budget is crucial, and that's what Virgil Goode is saying too.
No, and he's talking about actually balancing the budget in terms of true cuts versus talking about slowing down the growth over 10 years like the average rhino Republican's talking about.
Correct. He said that talking about balancing the budget is meaningless. It's not 5 years from now or 10 years from now. It's now. It's got to be done. And I think when you do that,
I bet he has a lot of enemies then.
Well, sure. He has a lot of enemies in the Democratic Party because he didn't play ball with them in some of this, and same thing with the Republicans, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Am I boring?
No, you are.
We only have about 6 minutes left, so I don't know if we have the opportunity to answer the full question in detail, but we are going to have Virgil Goode on tomorrow night, so of course he can answer more of the question. I believe it's from someone who missed the beginning part of the conversation, and they're asking if the goal is to win the presidency for Virgil Goode, or is it to just block Romney? I know there's he's on several states. Virgil Goode is, and through my understanding is if enough states are won to keep either candidate, doesn't matter whether it's Obama or Romney, from getting the 270, then it goes to the House of Representatives.
Correct.
To to take a vote on who the president would be. So if maybe we can reiterate for a couple minutes those points that we were making up, not making up, but we were talking about earlier, then go ahead. But we only have, as I said, about 5 minutes left, if that, not quite that either. So.
And then I have one quick question to ask you. You leave me just enough time for this last one, and you should be able to answer.
Well, also the discussion is also going to be on the Rex and Tex show afterwards. So let me reiterate to the folks, we'd really appreciate it if you could continue the discussion over at the Rex and Tex show. You can find that just by going, if you go to Blog Talk Radio's homepage. If you don't have the link in the chat, just go to on air, and then go where it says categories, and then scroll down to Election 2012. And you will find the Tex and Rex show. But go ahead,
post it.
Floyd.
I'll post it right now,
great.
Robert.
Thanks, Chris. Go ahead, Floyd, if you'd like to reiterate the points you were making earlier about that.
Well, from our standpoint as a Constitution Party, it's not our objective just to elect Virgil Goode. For example, if you're sitting there in Nevada, which, as I said, that's flipping back between toss-ups and very, very slight support for Obama. We have in that state a U.S. representative in each of the districts there, and we have a U.S. Senate candidate as well. And so depending on the strength of Virgil Goode at the top of the ticket, I would submit that we're going to receive down-ballot support for our U.S. representative candidates, our senator. We have two governors, one in Utah and one in West Virginia. Certainly we have local and state legislative positions down ballot as well. But depending on the strength of Virgil Goode at the top of the ticket, it could well be in individual states that we may well pick up representatives as well. Now, I don't have the internal polling data because I'm not that high up in the party. I'm just a country boy, but...
yeah, we can tell.
But, you know, to answer the question, why are we just attempting to get Virgil Goode to block either Romney or Obama? No, we're out to win. And with Virgil Goode, a transformational candidate for the Constitution Party, we may well be seeing some U.S. representatives, Constitution Party, in the U.S. Congress.
Here's the question of the hour, because you and I started talking about this earlier. But do you see, with the Tea Party being so dysfunctional through this primary, that with the Constitutional Party's platform, which is extremely close to what the Tea Party, for those people who haven't done the research, but it's very, 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 you know, in line with what the Tea Party issues were, that this is going to finish what the Tea Party let go when they, whatever they did after they won?
Yeah, well, I don't know that I would predict that, but what I do think is happening, I do think that internally in the Republican Party, and certainly there's been a fracture too from conservative Democrats, as Virgil Goode demonstrated. I do think that you're gonna see a lot of disaffected GOP members inside their party apparatuses go back and say, "We tried to tell you that this was not the way to go." And so it may well be that we could even enjoy some crossover support as they switch parties. I mean, that's also an alternative, too. Did that answer it?
Well, I hope so, because I've only got a little over a minute left. So hopefully, if you're able to call into the Rex and Tex show, Floyd, that'd be great. We could continue the conversation there. And Chris, you as well. I'll be calling in. I'll be calling there, as I said, in a little while. But I'd like to thank the folks for coming in, both listening in the chat and also who have listened through the archives and live and called in and all the other venues that people are listening in on the show this evening. I'd like to thank you as well for coming in tonight and talking to us, you know, about the Constitution Party. So,
amazing.
So thank you very much, everyone. Have a good evening. Take care, and I will close out the night, as I do every night, with a song by Aubrey Ashburn. Take care and hope to see you all over at the Rex and Tech Show. Good night.
Thank you.